Welcome to This Week in Fast Pitch, the podcast that keeps you up to date on the latest news, insights, and analysis from the world of fast pitch softball. Powered by 643, we bring you the stories behind the scores, the personalities behind the players, and the strategies behind the game. Whether you're a fan, a coach, or a player, we've got you covered with expert analysis and insider information. So sit back, relax, and get ready for a deep dive into the world of fast pitch softball. This is This Week in Fast Pitch, powered by 643, with your hosts, Jimmy Thomas and Kevin Bednoski. All right. We are excited to bring you another edition of This Week in Fast Pitch. This is an episode that we have been talking about pretty much since the inception, and we're super excited to talk with some really seasoned umpires and training staff about what they're seeing in the field and all that kind of stuff. But first off, some introductions. The man to my right, left on your screen, the lean, mean fighting machine, ready to rumble, Coach Jimmy Thomas.
Always.
Always. Hey, everyone. All right, man behind the glass, co-founder 643, Mr. Matt Cook.
Yes, and for you guys, just know that I produce nothing. That's like the running joke, so I am just a pretty face. Yeah. Right?
That's what you want to go with. That's fine.
I just show up.
We have assembled quite a panel to discuss all things umpiring. And first, to our left, Joe DeFranco. He's the VHSL Virginia Rules Interpreter and the UIC for USA Softball. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much. To his left, my right, President of the Northern Virginia Softball Umpires Association, Steve Smith. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And the Vice President and our best friend out there on the bases and behind the plate, Mr. Will Yao.
Welcome, right, guys. Welcome.
Guys, thanks
Glad
a lot. First off, thanks so much for coming. Really, really appreciate it. It's, you know, this is a topic that, you know, we can go a lot of different ways with, right? You know, there's a lot of things going on. But what we wanted to do is we sort of wanted to start with the notion that this umpiring job that you have is a profession, right? This is a profession. This is a passion profession. It's something you guys do professionally. It's not just a hobby. So can you talk a little bit, you know, Joe, why don't we start with you? Talk a little bit about sort of what does umpiring mean to you, and what is it that you're trying to instill to all the folks that you're kind of rolling up under your ranks?
Well, it's interesting you said that it's a profession and not a hobby, because I just created a video that showed, it's like a 3-minute video, and it shows what we actually do in real life. You know, so the purpose of the video is like, we're in your community, we're your kids' teachers, we're your kids' doctors, you know, we're in the military, whatever the case may be. So no, it's not really our profession to be out there umpiring. I mean, sure, we take training seriously and all that, but, you know, give us a break. You know, we're not professionals like you see on TV. And so this video just shows, just not even in our umpire uniform. Like, a lot of the pictures are from their work, and this is who we are. You respect us in the community, respect us on the field. And that's kind of the purpose of the video. And the other purpose of the video is to show that no matter who you are, come join us. We'll train you. You'll enjoy it.
Where can this video be found, Joe?
It's on our website, nvusa.org.
Okay.
NVSUA.
What did I say? nvusua.org, which is our website.
Right. We'll promote that for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So, Steve, what about you? What's sort of your view on sort of being an umpire and the impact that you're making?
Well, it started at 15 for me. I started as a little league umpire up in Northwest Pennsylvania, and my daughters both played right up through Division II college. Once they got out of it, you know, I think this game is the most beautiful game on the planet, and it's fun to. You know, when I was umpiring for the little kids, and I still do from time to time, it's great when they get their first hit and their faces light up and, you know, they do something good on the field, and you see that progression in the players. And that's what I really love to see is that type of joy coming out of the game. And that's why I still do it. You know, 35 years later, I'm, you know, still on the field because I love the game.
Awesome.
So.
And Will, you're doing it at a lot of different levels.
Yeah,
right?
And real quickly. I mean, I haven't been doing this that long. I've been doing this, 5 years maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Dabbled a little bit in some rec league stuff before that. You know, I've been a parent, a pitching parent. I've been a coach. I still do both of those things. And, you know, just around the game enough that it was like, okay, why not get paid a little bit of money to be here? Why not jump in and do a job that's, you know, there's not enough people jumping in and doing? And like Steve said, man, it's, you know, it's best seat in the house for a lot of these good games. So I've really come to enjoy it real quickly.
So back to the beginning. Oh, sorry, Matt. But back to the beginning, why softball and not baseball?
All three of us have daughters. That
is that what
the
it is? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I got involved before I had a daughter, and I literally thought I was going to a baseball meeting. It turned out it was a fast pitch softball meeting.
That's
but
funny.
It's we get a lot of people from baseball. It's just a faster moving game. Mm-hmm. And I think the parents and coaches are better in softball than they are in baseball.
No
so.
Kidding. Really?
Players?
Better. But it doesn't take much sometimes, but better.
Players the bar too. Is pretty set pretty low. Players too.
I coached like Will, and I think he would agree. Coaching girls, it's just their personality. And I don't know, coaching, when I coached my son or watched, you know, they're all acting like the people they see on TV.
Yeah.
And I just, the girls' game is just so much more real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They learn quicker. They learn better at younger ages than boys do a lot of the time.
So 5 years ago.
I love coaching high school softball, and I can attest to watching the boys and them do what they do. I'd rather spend my time with the girls.
Yeah. All right, and could you see yourself transitioning from coach to umpire?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
No? So that's what I was going to ask. So 5 years ago, you make this decision. You're doing some coaching and all of that. You're a pitcher dad, and what sort of made you jump into umpiring? I know you said a little bit of money there that you don't get when you're coaching, but there must have been something.
Yeah, pitching lessons are expensive, so that had a little bit to do with it. I mean, honestly, I was probably that obnoxious parent or that obnoxious coach, you know, bugging the umpires about calls, and they were like, "Well, why don't you come out here and do this?"
Yeah,
you know, there was a guy in our association that literally did that, and not a bad idea.
Yeah. Did you find yourself as a parent sort of digging into the umpires?
I mean, not so much digging in sometimes as it was like, okay, I could probably do this maybe a little better than this guy's doing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. It's interesting you mentioned that because when I was an umpire and a parent at the same time, and the other parents would look to me when they thought they saw a bad umpire, like, ooh, what are you going to do? What do you think of this umpire? And I'm like, they're not bad. They're not a bad umpire. They're just out of position. You know, everything about them, their timing, their positioning. And they hated hearing that. They just wanted me to say, yeah, they're horrible. Yeah. But there are reasons they were getting it wrong.
So what are those top reasons? What are the separators? Forget good or bad, but what are the separators that you know, take people to the next level?
Positioning and timing is that's it. I mean, most umpires make their calls too quick. You know, balls and strikes, way too quick. They don't wait till the ball is caught, and that's when you make your decision. Some umpires, you can, strike.
Yeah.
Strike, which means they made the decision as the ball was reaching the plate, if they're calling it as it's hitting the mitt. And then it carries over on the bases as well. And then positioning, you know, some of them line up right behind the catcher, and you should be in the slot off to the side of the catcher. Those are the two main things, really.
Yeah.
And how do you correct a lot of those stuff? Do you guys police it on the field a lot? I'm sure it's hard to police sort of a colleague and things like that. How do you sort of correct that year to year?
So one of the things that we do really well in the Northern Virginia Umpires Association that doesn't necessarily carry over everywhere else is we have kind of developed a culture of we expect each other to give feedback when you're done with a game or during a game. You know, I can learn just as much from a rookie that's just gone through training as they can from me. You know, we get done with a game and it's okay. What do you got for me? What did you see in my game that I can improve?
Constructive criticism.
So that's, yes, definitely. That's one. Number two, man, God, game changer is an absolute blessing. I mean, you wouldn't believe the amount of video we're passing back and forth.
Oh, no way. Okay.
You know, you sent me that play from your game last night, and the first thing we noticed when we looked at it was, God, he's a mile away from the call.
Yeah.
You know, positioning would have given him more credibility.
Yeah.
I will say that the bulk of the feedback I've gotten on it was, that's obstruction. That was a good call, more so than not. It wasn't 100%. It was, 60, 40, 70, 30. But the first thing everybody noticed was positioning's not good.
Okay.
You know, so just, okay, here's where you can position yourself to see this stuff.
A lot of this starts in training. I mean, we have this drill where if I catch the ball, call it a strike. If it hits the glove and bounces out, call it a ball. Now, that's not what we do in real life, but it keeps them from calling it too quick.
Is there annual training? How does that work?
Well, actually, we have two training sessions, one in the winter and one in the fall. Great. We have two recruiting classes. So, and anyone's welcome to come that's, you know, with us. But it's geared toward the new people for that particular season.
Now, as a small commercial, I think just on our behalf here at 643 is we would absolutely love, and I know I've spoken to Steve a little bit about it, if there's anything that we can do here to help you guys execute your training programs, we are more than welcome to do that. We have pitchers and catchers in here literally every single day.
Right.
You know, and Jimmy's been running these Friday night live hitting sessions where we have pitchers, catchers, and hitters, right? So it would give you guys an opportunity.
When we do training sessions, we always have live players. Yeah. You want to see us throw the ball across the infield because that does not get them used to the speed of the game.
Yeah.
So, we would take advantage of
any of
that. So,
like I just said, anything that we can do to assist you guys. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the next question that I wanted to ask, which is, you know, with all due respect, we're seeing the thinning ranks and the aging ranks of the umpires, right?
I'm a young guy at 42.
Right.
That's crazy.
Right. And I, you know, who I haven't seen at all this year is that younger guy, Kevin, because I think he's doing more college stuff now. Right. So he's sort of moving beyond. So how do we add to your ranks? How can we help you, or what is it that you need from us or from the community at large to help you gain access to more people?
Nationally, for officials, I mean, you could Google this, 80% of officials don't get past their third year. I mean, that's just a fact. You could Google that right now. 80% of, and that's all sports, not just umpiring. Now, a lot of that gets attributed to they're getting yelled at all the time.
Right.
We don't really have that problem in our association. Like, we probably recruit about 20 umpires a year, you know, and which is really, really good. Other parts of the state, they're just not recruiting. We have different ways of recruiting. We started going to the Arlington County Fair, so we want to maybe branch out to other fairs, and that's been good. Steve got some new ideas with recruiting.
And who are you finding success with? Is it the former players, the young people?
Mostly former parents and former coaches.
Okay.
Occasionally former players, but all walks of life, really. I mean, but they got to know the game.
Yeah.
You know, they have some connection to the game, but not always.
Yeah. And what I struggle internally because, you know, I'll jump on an umpire and I have before and things. But then I sit back and it's like, man, you know, you got to look at the game as a whole and wonder why we are losing numbers. And, you know, coaches struggle internally with that, I think.
I would say that most coaches or even parents, maybe you feel like a bit of a jerk after the fact.
I do.
But it's such an emotional game. Like, you know, I can see it and I'm like, oh my God, look at that jerk over there, or look at Jimmy screaming at this umpire. But in the moment it's tough, you know. I think we all kind of tend to do that.
A lot of times we'll hash it out after, like,
yeah,
you know, we start to know each other. And Will and I had a funny thing earlier.
Got that coin in your pocket.
Coin, yeah, you know. So we'll have our moments during the game, but we'll hash it out at our next time we see each other after the game or something.
So let me go back to the recruiting piece. I think you mentioned aging. So most of the umpires are older in age. Are they also generally male? I mean, I don't see as many women out there. I mean, what does that breakdown look like?
Our local association, Northern Virginia Softball Umpires, has 25% women.
Okay.
But if you look at,
is that good? I mean,
that's
by comparison?
Unbelievable. Okay. Good. Okay. If you look at Virginia as a whole, it's about 3% women.
Oh, wow.
Including the 25% that we have.
Wow.
So that is a problem all around, but apparently not a problem locally for us.
Yeah. And do you guys, from a recruiting standpoint, I think you were saying Steve's got some interesting things he's working on. Are you intentional about that? I mean, do you feel like you want to see more women umpiring?
You know, it helps, it ends up growing because we have women on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a youth umpire that was working a game at a 10U. So she's an eighth grader, and this 9-year-old saw her and was like, I want to do that I get to be 14.
Yeah.
And she did.
Yeah.
And she's now a senior, but you know, that helps. And it's amazing that you still go, women still go to a game as umpires, and players will say, wow, we have a women umpire today. It's like, Yeah. You still hear that in this day and age, but it's that's just the way it is. Yeah. But fortunately, I think we've just been able to grow because, you know, you join our association, you're not the one of two women. It's 25 women in an association of 100. So. Yeah.
Now, you said earlier that most people are staying on average for 3 years. And then
no, that's nationally.
Nationally. And that some of that is based off of, you know, engagement with parents or coaches or whatever, but that you guys don't experience that.
Well, it's all about where you draw the line.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, soccer, they get away with a lot more. I mean, we have, it's like, it's crazy. You go to a soccer game or something else and all the fans are yelling and screaming, and you go to a softball game and you just don't hear that because we train our umpires to say, stop it.
Yeah.
You know, we have a different expectation. Now, if you go to a softball association in the next state, that might not be the case. Okay. So I can't sit there and talk toward them, but we've created a culture where that's just not allowed.
Yeah.
We don't allow coaches to yell. We don't allow parents to yell. But go ahead.
I was going to say, I feel like we look at it like we're a little crazy, our parents and coaches in softball. But you guys are telling us that are actually not.
You're passionate. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've seen the Facebook videos and things like that where there's fist fights. And, I mean, they are generally a little bit more aggressive maybe than what we have around here. But I feel the same way, Jimmy.
But I ask this when I watch those Facebook videos, my first question is not what a bunch of crazy parents. It's like, what did the umpire do? Like, why didn't I'm sure they saw something escalating.
Yeah. Right.
Where were they?
Yeah.
Why did it get to that point?
Well, and that's something we talked about in an organization meeting the other day is we maybe needed to be a little bit quicker to pull the warning trigger.
Right.
You know, to just kind of nip things before they become a thing. So we talked about that as a group.
Well, honestly, that's...
It works.
Works.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Because for me as a coach, I want to know where that line is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Because we're gonna have a discourse. Like, right. If I believe something and you believe something, we're gonna have a conversation about it. And then you turn to me and say, "Okay, Kevin, that's we're good. That's enough." I'm good.
Is there any education that's happening on that standpoint, or are there any rules that at the high school levels that they get with you and say, "Hey, this is where we're drawing the line"? Or like I see it in MLB all the time. Like guys don't argue. I would argue everything. Like I watched
Aaron Judge just got thrown out for the first time in his career.
I saw that. Yeah. But there seems to be this sort of, well, maybe it's a written rule, I don't know, but you don't argue balls and strikes. Like it's
that's
you
in the
take
rule book.
It and you get, but like from a coach's standpoint, Jimmy and Kevin, like, is there anything that like your ADs or the countywide that they say,
we're not going to
allow you to do these things?
Yeah. So we have coaches meetings. I mean, I assume Jimmy's the same way. Like we had a spring coaches meeting and all of this was,
do these guys attend?
No, just at the school.
There's an online course you have to take through VHSL that basically has a whole slide that says, do not get thrown out of games. Yeah, These are the numbers.
And there's also a countywide and statewide sort of sportsmanship award, basically, right? That each spring, if all of the sports associated with your school in that season are no player, no coach, no fan gets ejected or something like that, then, you know, your school gets the sportsmanship award and things like that.
That's something we actually started this past year as an association, is kind of a organizational sportsmanship award for a school. And one of the things Joe was quick to point out was it's not necessarily that you don't argue. I mean, the guy that we gave it to argues with the best of them.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just the way you approach it. We're going to disagree. You're going to see something different than what I see. With two men, there's going to be situations where you've got a better angle than anybody on the field does. So heck yeah, you're going to see something different.
Right.
And it's how you approach that. It's the way you come out and have the conversation that, you know, disagreements are going to happen and they're expected. And when you see something, we want you to bring that to our attention.
I have a great segue into a topic here. Coaches asking the correct question versus asking the wrong question to try to get their answer, but they're asking the wrong question. Well, can you sort of speak to that a little bit?
I didn't mean to pick on soccer before, but sports like soccer, basketball, football, if they were trying to get their point across, they have to scream. They're not going to waste a timeout to talk with you because they only get so many timeouts. The beauty of our sport, and I guess it's just softball and baseball, is you can call a timeout anytime you want. It doesn't count against you, and come talk to us. So the first rule we lay down is to our umpires is there will be no yelling. There's no reason for you to yell from the dugout. You know, we push approachability. Come out and talk with us and just call timeout, and we're going to have a one-on-one conversation. And for me to focus on what you're saying, I don't want to be looking over your shoulder at your parents like, I'm not really paying attention to you because I'm listening to this scene with this parent. So you got to also make sure your parents are on, you know, not yelling and screaming so you and I can communicate. So as far as coming out and asking the right question, yeah, there are some umpires, I think, that take it a little bit too far and say, what's your question? What's your question? But I just want to have a discussion. The first thing I will ask you when you come out is, what did you see? I want to hear what you saw. And that kind of puts some coaches stop in their tracks, like, wow, you really want to listen to what I have to say? I'm like, yeah. I mean, tell me what you saw, and then you go through it. And then I listen carefully, and I'm like, oops, that's where we saw something different. So now I'll focus on that part. Or that's where you're getting the rule wrong, and I'll focus on that part. So I know where you're going with your question about what's the right question to ask, but I just want to hear what you have to say. And if there's something in there I can focus on, that's what we'll focus on.
Oh, and our goal is always what?
Yeah,
get the calls right.
All right.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, and I always kind of point to the fact that in high levels of NCAA softball where they've got video review now, in Major League Baseball where they've got video review now, what are they changing the calls on 90% of the time? Judgment calls. Yeah. Safe out. You know, what have you.
Bang,
if
bang.
Judgment calls can be changed in the SEC and Big 12 and Major League Baseball, why can't we change them in high school?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you get some umpires that are like, oh, well, that's a judgment call. You can't argue judgment calls. I don't necessarily agree with that as long as you do it the right way.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to be Jim Joyce on the field watching Armando Galarraga's perfect game disappear. Like, we want to get those calls right.
I mean, we have instant replay, too. The problem is he's my only other camera angle.
Yeah.
And it's not a very good one. So what's the likelihood we're going to overturn the call? It's possible.
Well, there's also a perception, I would say, that there's a perception on the, you know, asking for help concept that it never, you know.
Used to be. We're trying to change that culture.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. But the perception from the masses is that, oh, okay, they're going to just do that. They're going to go ask for help just in, you know, you guys are telling a joke when you're
right,
out there.
Talking about something
you're talking about what you're going
to
grab
used
for dinner
to be,
after.
Yeah, you're right. That was a culture that needed to be changed. And that, in training, people would even say, they're, you know, just talk about where you're going to dinner and just, you know, appease them.
Oh,
but
really?
It's not that way anymore.
Wow.
It's just not that way anymore, at least not what we do.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I mean, when I guess we hear that, we cringe. It's don't do that.
Yeah, I think the thing that I struggle with in that is you're looking for something to get overturned or see it, or you're on the other end of it, and then you see the guy overturn the call that was 60
you had that
feet
happen
away,
in a game, yeah, right,
like,
right.
Gosh.
We had that happen in the spring break game.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like, man, that's tough when the guy overturns the call from 60 feet away when the guy 5 feet away.
But maybe I'm going to Will 60 feet away and say, Will, I was blocked on that, and I'm not so sure I got that right. You got anything? So
maybe I'm going to him
and not saying, I'm not changing my call,
right.
Will. You know,
right,
I mean,
right,
I might
right.
be open to talk to him about what I may have missed. So that's we're just creating that opportunity.
Is there a sense, sort of last question on this sort of asking for help concept? I've gotten feedback from an umpire, like, basically saying, I can't overturn that. Whatever it was, I can't overturn it. I should have overturned it, but I didn't because I didn't want to show anybody up. I didn't want to show the other guy up.
We don't want to work with that umpire.
Well, but I mean, I'm just saying it's out there. It happened this year.
Right.
It happened this year.
Yeah.
So, and I get it. Like, you know, you're trying to retain umpires, right? And we're trying to grow them and train them and all that kind of stuff. And I get it. So there is a balance beam that you guys are on. Trying to do those things and accomplish those goals.
Yeah, I mean, nobody likes to be proven wrong. I'm actually still, even now in MLB, how, you know, a home plate umpire can get the review call and change it and be okay with it, you know, like,
hey,
I screwed it up. I didn't, you know, no big deal.
Right. But if you go with what you guys are talking about,
you just gotta leave your ego
right.
at the door on that, man.
Yeah.
What's it about? Is it about being right or is it about getting it right?
Right. Like, right. Yeah.
But I wanted to ask y'all's thoughts on all the technology and the automated strike zones and things like that. What are your all's, you know, when you're watching an MLB game, do you think, man, just let the umpires do it? Or do you think technology is bringing something new and innovative to the game?
I think it has its place. I don't want to see technology replace the human element of it because I think they rely too much on that technology. And they're expecting umpires to be 100% perfect, you know, borderline pitch. That pitch that Aaron Judge got thrown out on was an actual strike.
Right.
You know, it touched the square on the TV, and he argued it, and he got thrown out for it. So the technology, you know, has a piece, you know, on those calls where you're just, you just, you're in a bad position. You're not going to get into a good position no matter what you do. And that's where I think that technology has a piece in it as well. So we can look at that call. And
do you think it potentially it makes right. your job harder?
It can.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can.
You mean the fact that it exists?
Just the fact that you can always constantly be second guessed, you know, and
there's got to be strict rules with it. And that's why, because the umpire can't go out on the field second guessing himself all the time. He's going to have a bad game every game.
Yeah. Well, I think minor league baseball's figuring some of that out, right? You get a couple of challenges on the balls and strikes, and once they're done, they're done, and there's pretty quick turnaround and things like that.
It happens in 30 seconds.
I've been impressed with that. Yeah. That's worked really well.
So it's worked out pretty well. But, you know, like, Will and I were texting back and forth the other day, and I said, you know, I really do like those on Twitter. There's that one Twitter account that has the umpire report cards from Major League Games every day, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty neat to see that kind of stuff, and I assume they're getting all that feedback.
But the stress that goes along with that, with everything that you're doing, the analytics and the, you know.
So we don't have to deal with that at the local level. But what I'm hoping for is that it trickles down to coaches to remind you that these professional officials in every sport, you could turn on the TV tonight and they're overturning a call.
Yeah.
So is it really to get upset with us?
Those report cards. So my athletic director is also an NCAA basketball official, right? So, and during our trainings, he always does a great job every year. He's like, hey, look, you know, these report cards, 2-4% of the calls in Major League Baseball, they get wrong.
On balls and strikes.
On balls and strikes, right? Yeah. In basketball, he's like, yeah, I'm now down. I'm not in the NBA. I'm down, and I'm not, you know, Power Five. I'm like a mid-major official. Right. Okay, so it keeps trickling down.
Yeah.
And by the time you get to high school or youth or rec,
what do you expect from us?
So that's my point.
I'm saying it could work to our advantage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but I think more people need to understand that dynamic. That hey, you know, the standard. You know, we always want to have the Major League Baseball standard. Let's say right, but you know. Let's be realistic about, you know,
how that goes back to what Joe was saying earlier, right? It's not our profession, right? So manage your expectations a little bit.
Well, I was actually going to take that a step further. I'm a tech guy. Okay, I grew up in tech, and I believe that the speed at which tech develops is very, very fast. And already you can see it at our level with Game Changer and the like. I mean, Jimmy was probably replaying that that call last night in the dugout, right? but you could have been. Yes. You probably had some parents that were looking at it. Do you see that coming down to this level? I mean, I know that sounds a little far-fetched, but...
They already alluded to the call that I had in the Battlefield game the other day. I was looking at that in the parking lot right after the game ended. That's great to have that.
Would you welcome, let's just say the technology advanced to a point where... You know, I know it's different than MLB. They've got, you know, New York that can look at these things or whatever. But do you see that coming down to our level, right? Hey, I'd like to call a timeout and use one of my challenges, and here's the replay of that video. I mean, is that something that you guys talk about? Is it something that you see? Or is that just you think it'll never touch this level?
I think the only thing that would stop it eventually would be the equity of it.
Yeah.
Like resources. This school has it, but this school doesn't.
Right.
So
right,
until every school has the same access.
Do all of the schools around here have... cameras that they're utilizing?
All the Loudoun County schools, I
think, but those are not cameras that are
you can't see the strike zone.
Yeah, that's just a sort
behind
of
right the angles and whatnot.
Yeah. Broad picture. Yeah.
I mean, we were watching. We did this little highlight thing that we do with local youth. They send in their highlights, and then we talk about them on the show or whatever. That's pretty cool. But some of the technology we're noticing last time, I mean, they've got ads running on this thing. They got the girl's picture.
The double screens.
Yeah, multi-camera view.
A multi-camera
thing.
Well,
the PBR thing that baseball has is awesome. I don't know, it's PBR, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the video quality and the stuff they're doing. Yeah. It's really cool.
I mean, it's only a matter of time before you see a strike zone box on those things. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, we pull clips all the time and use them in training. I mean, if I'm doing a training on interference, I go through every type of interference, but I give the rule, and then I have a video. And I give and most of those videos I either get from YouTube or Game Changer.
Yeah.
So it's really helping our training.
We're there.
Well, real quick on that, man, that's been a great tool for us, but it's frustrated us to no end this year with the ability of schools to lock their accounts so that no one else can get in outside from family. Yeah. So if we've got a play that we want to see, okay, number one, did we get this right? Number two, what was the umpire's positioning? Did they apply the rule correctly? Things like that. And then we can't access the video.
I just paid $90 to open mine up
there. Right. So. I think Buchanan's got a good thing going with his, with the Rock Gold account, where he's got a roster spot assigned to like college coaches. So you're not sitting there requesting family membership of a player, which gets a little awkward for umpires and you know, other coaches and stuff. So the thing I'd recommend for coaches that are listening is add yourself to your players, to your player roster on Game Changer, because you can't request to be family member of the administrators or the coaches. You have to be family member of a player the way Game Changer has it set up.
Right.
So set up a roster spot that says your name, that says the team name, that says umpires or whatever.
Yeah.
And we can request to be family of that position on your roster, and then we have access to pull video and whatnot.
That's a great idea.
And you guys send me videos from your games all the time. That's great. If others want to do that way too, that's helpful.
So you guys are open to, you know, sort of, hey, what's your thought on that? If I sent you a clip, you know,
I guarantee you we're doing that before you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, and so many. I mean, we've got guys from across the state now with Joe's position reaching out saying, hey, I had this play in this game. Can you get me the video of it? So
yeah, you just told me that you had varying opinions on the video clip I sent you last night. I'm dying to break that down.
Right.
I'm dying to sit there, and I want to know.
Yeah, that's the whole interference obstruction conversation, which can be a whole podcast in itself.
But
if you want to kind of go down that rabbit hole a little bit, we can. I will say real quick, though, on the strike zone piece and the technology aspect, that's one of the best things that ever happened to me was when I jumped in and started doing some of the college ball. I got to do a inter-squad scrimmage at UNC Charlotte at the beginning of the year last year, and they had the strike zone tracker set up in the stadium, and the first base coach had it on his iPad. So I'm sitting there calling balls and strikes and then looking at him, and you know, 5 to 8 seconds later, he's confirming me the call for me or telling me, you know, if I called it a strike,
so
no, it was inside by this much, what have you.
Who brought that? Who purchased that?
The school, I think. Really? Yeah. And you know, some of the ACC schools have it, but not all. I would probably all the SEC schools have it.
So why do you buy
it,
that as a team?
They've got a really good program down there. That's a really underrated program. But yeah, I mean, first of all.
Are you using that in practice for your hitters? You're using it for hitters and pitchers?
Pitchers, you know, if you want to throw a pitch on purpose that's 3 inches outside, who determines that it's 3 inches outside and something a bat to get a swing on versus a call on, you know, working stuff like that. Yeah. And then, I mean, how many hitters know the strike zone?
Right.
You know, you're standing there at a weird angle at that outside corner. What's a strike on the outside corner? What's not? Like Steve said, Judge blew up about the one that it was a strike. They don't always know it at the major league level either, you know. Getting feedback there helps.
As a lifelong Yankee fan, I would argue that no, it was a strike, but I would argue that he did not blow up. John Boy in his breakdown said
Aaron Boone is a whole different level.
Aaron Boone, yes. We like that.
Well, although Aaron Boone had a great
he got thrown out for not saying anything.
He got yanked from a game because a fan yelled from behind the dugout, which was fantastic.
I remember that happened in a Marlins game one time too. I think that was the owner yelling from on top of the dugout and the manager got ejected.
That's awesome. Jimmy was sort of kind of broaching this subject. And this is just a general question that I have, but also I guess just as it relates to this technology investment, and is it the kind of thing that you guys as a group would say, hey, why don't we look at, you know, putting more money into technology or whatever, right, for training or whatever it is? How are you guys funded? I mean, I know you get paid by, you know, the venues that bring your umpires in, but is there other funding routes that you use?
Well, a percentage of each game, you know, you got to pay the umpire.
Right.
But then there's a percentage of each game that goes to the association.
Okay.
So we have a board with, you know, we already talked about president, vice president.
Yeah.
So they get a little money. But there's money left over for buying any training equipment we may need. Or we have to rent a facility to have training. Even in the summertime, we rent a facility. It's like, you know, these guys are always like, why don't we just go to a free field? And I'm like, well, it could be 1,000 degrees or it could be raining.
Yeah.
You know, and I want you know, to know when we're having our training.
Well, back to Kevin's point, keep us in mind for that kind of
stuff.
Yeah,
we know a
place. We'd be happy to help you out. Yeah. Are there opportunities, though, for additional, you know, funds? I mean, I got to imagine if you guys had more money, there's more stuff you can do with it or more marketing or recruiting that you can do.
We're pretty good as an association financially.
Yeah.
But that's because we've been around for 35 years. So just, you know, I don't know what's true about other associations. They may just be, you know, paying out what they get in and moving on.
But
the
as far
season.
As like the strikes on trackers and stuff, you know, there's a reason half the ACC has it and half of it don't. It's prohibitively money. Expensive.
Yeah.
We used to, back in the day, we used to get PVC piping, build like this frame that had string that was the
strike. Yeah, y'all have them here, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, it's like the wiffle ball, right?
You know,
the
wiffle ball. Yeah. Well, what's that's not wiffle ball. What's that called? Blitz ball or something?
Yeah, blitz ball.
So we've invented a lot of things to get. I mean, we even have a, we call a sliding sausage. You know, it's just a little kid's sweatpants filled with rags, and that's our slider. I mean,
so a runner sliding into a bag for a tag play.
Okay. So that the umpires can practice making the call. And you know, you could, coaches should be using that too, because I used to use it in practice to get them to learn how to tag the dirt, find the foot, as opposed to reach for the body.
Yeah.
And we used to slide that in. So,
sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just, while we're on the money topic.
Yeah, go.
Is umpire pay a deterrent for new people joining the association?
I think they're usually very shocked at how much we get paid. So
in a good way.
Yeah, in a good way.
Really?
So I would say no.
So it's not a deterrent. But is that a perception that that's a problem?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we have, you know, we have teenagers that umpire. And, you know, I think last year a mom came up and said, oh, my son might be interested, you know. And then whoever was the mentor at that game, it's like, yeah, they get paid $72 for this hour and a half game. What? I thought it was volunteer.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, so.
I will say, though, that during high school, you're not paid until the end of the season. So that can be a little bit of a deterrent to especially younger people and things like that.
And are there different levels based off of your tenure, based off of your experience? No. Wow.
Some places do, like the plate umpire gets paid more than the base umpire. Yeah. I like that we don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of encourages people to say, well, I'm only doing bases. So I'm only doing plate. Like.
And you'll take basically anybody. So if somebody has interest in umpiring, whatever their background is, whether they played or didn't play, you feel like you can train anybody up and make them.
And we don't even take any. I mean, they have to pay for the training, but they don't have to pay till after they've come to a couple sessions. So if it's just not working out for them and they're realizing that, they didn't lose anything.
Okay. And then are there dues annually as an umpire?
Yeah, I mean, there's, because you have to have insurance for liability if you get sued. So you got to pay some high school dues. You got to pay dues to our association. You got to pay dues to USA Softball. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if we've ever had someone not go through with training after they've seen how much it costs. Some people will defer some of the cost if money's a problem to when they get their first paycheck.
Got it.
But, you know, it takes two games, I think, to make up all the dues.
Yeah. And then, I mean, the most expensive thing is those really shiny steel-toed shoes, right? For behind.
Is
that the most expensive?
Baseball
part?
And softball is the most expensive sport to officiate, and that can be a deterrent as well.
The shin guards, the chest protector, the mask. Yeah.
I got a set. Yeah. Don't worry.
Yeah.
You know, I know. I got a friend that was doing a soccer officials program at high school. I mean, they just need a shirt and a whistle.
Right.
You know, we can't supply what an umpire needs.
Right. So what's the pathway look like? So, Will, I always reference you. You're one of our better umpires in the area. We're excited when we have you. But you haven't been doing it all that long, right? So what's the path and why? What, you know, what streamlined you and got you sort of doing college games this quickly?
I wasn't even looking to do it at all. I mean, first of all, I just jumped into umpiring for something fun and healthy to do, you know, and have a good time on the field. And I was working a USA national tournament a couple summers ago, and the structure there is they send guys out to give you more formal feedback and evaluations on the field. And that guy that I had a couple summers ago happened to be a college assigner for the ODAC and the CAA and A-10 and stuff like that in the region, and said, hey, you ever thought about doing college ball? And I was like, man, I've only been up around like 3 years. Heck no, I haven't thought about that yet. And he goes, well, when you're ready, give me a call. You know, it was
what did he see? What was it? You don't know?
Accuracy? This guy trained me well. Yeah.
There you go.
Are they
looking at your calls for accuracy?
Yeah.
Your level
oh, yeah. Demeanor
on
the
field.
So talking about a college basketball official, we had a guy, our college guy does weekly locker room chats, just kind of talk through various aspects of the game. And he brought a guy in that's been doing college basketball at the highest level for a long time. His name's Roger Ayers. He was on the national championship game this year. And the first story he told was that when he went to camp for the first time for college after doing, like, same as me, 3 years of high school, you know, I love this. I want to do college. That he went to a camp in Indianapolis and was told his hotel room would be available at 2 o'clock, and he's going to check in at like 3:30, and he goes to check in and his room's not available yet. He'd been on an airplane for the first time going from Roanoke, Virginia to Indianapolis, and was like, okay, well, never been here before. I'm going to go walk around, explore the city a little bit, get something to eat. I haven't had anything to eat all day. And you know, this is back in 99, 2001 time frame, something like that. So not text me, but you know, call me when my room's ready, whatever. And no sooner did he walk away from the counter 4 or 5 steps, so they said, hey, Mr. Ayers, your room's actually ready now. Here's your key. And fast forward a little bit later that night, and they're at their first session for the training for the conference, whatever. And the guy leading that session in the room gets up to the front room, says, oh, you know, how was everybody's flight? How was everybody having any problems checking into the room? Everybody's like, oh, no, everything's great. This, that, and the other guy kills the lights, throws something on the screen, and it's literally a 20-minute video of 10 to 15 seconds of all the officials there checking into their hotel room. And you would not believe the cuss words and the just screaming and the berating of the hotel staff. Right. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So the point was, you know, you never know what people are looking at, what they're looking for when you have eyes on you. And, you know, they popped the lights back on and said, okay, you know, 45 of you can go home now. You know, like.
Well, honestly,
I read that the Vikings drafted McCarthy because of the way he handled himself in a deli. They took him to lunch, and they loved the way he interacted with the staff, and that was a huge plus. And they
we tell kids in the recruiting, you know, profiles, like college coaches are always watching. They're watching your interaction with parents in the parking lot. They're watching your failures. They're watching your successes. So yeah, why not that? Why not have that all the way down to the officials?
They even watch to see who's carrying the players' equipment.
Yeah. Absolutely, 100%.
So what's the grading system look like? Like, how do you guys at the end of the year sort of identify who your better officials
are? We just did this, two nights ago?
Two nights.
So good question. Steve, go ahead and tackle that.
Well, we just went through and we take our roster, and the three of us kind of put our heads together, you know. We've seen this person. We've seen this person. We may have not seen them, but we've got feedback from other umpires, their partners.
From coaches.
And from coaches. And tiers, we put them in tiers. So who's good for a first-round playoff game? And we list them out. And then we'll tier out this, you know, who we considering for a state-level game. And we'll tier them out. And it has a lot to do with experience, their attitude, their, you know, making sure that they're solid before we move them up the chain. Now, sometimes, you know, the challenge we run into is the availability of the games, right? So some of our top level umpires may not be available for that game. So we got to put a sub in there, and maybe it's the next tier down, but you know, we make sure, you know, or try to make sure, it's not an exact science. We try to make sure that the umpire's ready before we advance them. And something that the three of us are really, really preaching to these umpires is that you have to talk to us. You have to tell us what your goals are. If we're to, you know, I've had two umpires tell me they're happy with JV and rec ball. That's all they want to do. So that's all they're going to do. But if you really want to advance in this sport and do higher level games and have a state championship, and you know, we need to have that feedback from you. And not a lot of the people that we get in know what the process is. So we got to do a better job of laying that out for them and letting them know that, hey, this is how you get to your goal. And
can we talk about scheduling for a hot second?
I was going to say regular season stuff. I'm sure you guys have opinions about that.
Yeah, like you guys are both like opening your schedule up for tonight, right?
Right. Well, Mike, I'm gonna jump in really fast. So last year my team was 7-14.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Now, Kevin, we just talked about this.
Now we're 18-1. At the beginning of the year, was there a discussion that says, "Oh, Lightridge's not very good, so we're gonna go ahead and give them, you know, someone who might be a little bit lower on the list of the umpires."
Okay. Yep.
And then do we rehash or revisit that list during the season at all?
So like we've alluded to, there's 3 or 4 associations in the area. Northern Virginia is assigning process is very different than some of the others. And there's a lot of advantage to that, really. One of the biggest reasons for doing it the way we do, and what I mean by that is PVOA, where you guys are. Steve sets the roster and assigns games all the way through the season from the start of the year, makes some little tweaks here and there. And of course, when games get rescheduled like you guys is tonight, you know, that'll change some things. But Northern Virginia, the guy that we have there, schedules chunks at a time. Like we said, we do one of the better jobs of training. So we got a whole crop of rookies and we got to kind of let them get their feet wet and figure out how quickly they're going to advance. And that allows us to put some of them on some of the bigger games later in the year, on some of the varsity games as they're ready for of stuff.
We'll recognize that we might use this rookie in playoffs. Yeah. We got to give this rookie more varsity games to prepare them.
Yeah. And that's a question for you guys is, okay, you know, yeah, you want the two best umpires on your biggest games, but does it maybe make more sense to have one really strong qualified umpire and somebody who's right. really kind
so
of
I was
going
to ask, here's the question that I wanted to get to. Would it be beneficial to have JV varsity doubleheaders?
Well, it would be beneficial for our schedulers because that saves an umpire.
But it also helps with this training notion where you can
I was going to bring that up. Our association, again, I think, I know our association is pretty unique in that these guys, all three of us, will work JV several times this year to work with new umpires. And there are other associations, I know for a fact, in the state, it's like, these are the varsity umpires, these are the JV umpires, and until someone dies or retires, you're not going to get any varsity games. And we're not like that at all, which creates this situation where umpires, you know, advance quicker.
Is it competitive?
So is it competitive to...
Just the umpires trying to...
No, not at all.
Climb the ladder as fast as they can?
It's not really. The nice thing about it is I don't know how we created this culture, but our veterans are like, oh, I'll do a JV game today. There's no, you know, I got to do a JV game.
Yeah, right.
You know, and then I'll text them that morning, you know, hey, you're working with so-and-so. This is their first year of high school. They started in the fall, whatever, the history. And they love it, and they work with them.
And Joe, give yourself a lot more credit than that, man. I mean, nobody's got a better track record than him. Nobody's got a better resume than him in the state. And look at the schedule he's working. I mean, he's working tons of low-level varsity, tons of JV. Mm-hmm. And he's just got that mindset of, you know, yeah, I can do – and I've done anything I can do on the field. But my goal now is to get people ready to replace me.
Yeah, think about it from a perspective of, you know, we have thinning ranks of umpires, right? You're trying to always recruit the next 25, but you never know where they're going to come from. What can we be doing – from, let's say, the high school schedule to
going back to your original question of the JV varsity doubleheader, that would help us a lot. And we've been trying to push that for years, but I think it also helps with buses.
Well, I think it helps with buses and transportation and umpires. What it hurts is kids.
Parents getting in the game.
Because you're going to have to start a JV game at 5.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And, when does school get, you know, in Loudoun County, for instance, we know school doesn't get out till 4:19 or whatever it is. So it's like, you know, the kids would have to leave last block and blah, blah, blah. So you know, there's academic restrictions that are kind of happening there, too. But you know, we traditionally, in Fairfax County, they play on Saturdays. In Loudoun County, we've traditionally never played on a Saturday, right? So, you know, are there other ways to help you schedule where you can use the roster that you have more efficiently is really the crux of it.
Well, you know, Fairfax County has another issue where they have 8 no-play days.
Correct.
That doesn't even include spring break. So 8 no-play days plus 5 days in spring break plus whatever rainouts there are since, you know, mid-March.
Makes it hard.
Yeah. Now, we will, if we have to, put one umpire on a JV game to take care of that issue. But
you have to have an umpire available at 4:30 or 5 o'clock.
And
in
it
the
used
afternoon.
To be, you know, Tuesdays and Fridays are when teams played and – but now they're all over the place. I mean,
The weather really kind of messes things up. So we are now 50 minutes into this and
we could go all day.
And we could go all day. Yeah. But one thing we haven't really talked about are some of the nitty gritty things, right? Some of the rules stuff, some of the, you know, umpire mechanics things, just some, you know, some things that I kind of geek out about and are very interested in. So I'd love to start with the concept of illegal pitches and the pitcher, you know, the varying rules between levels. That's number one, right? You got to know what rule set we're talking about, whether you're high school, you know, VHSL or college or whatever. It's very different, length, step back and all that kind of stuff. But what are pitchers missing right now? What that you guys are seeing? What's sort of the untaught things that are going on with illegal pitches right now that you're calling frequently?
Well, the new rule of being able to disengage with the dirt has been awesome. Yeah. I mean, I knew it was going to be awesome. Yeah. And all these umpires are freaking out on Facebook about
leaping.
When they land, they're re-push. And it's like, no. So we had to combat that with all these videos that replanting is not the same as re-landing.
Right.
You know, so I don't think that, as it turned out, as I anticipated, that has not been a problem, and it's one less thing for us to worry about, mm-hmm. As far as illegal pitches go. So that's nice.
That used to be the biggest thing. It's not anymore.
Right. Yeah. But you want to talk about some things you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, it's improved. So we're calling less illegal pitches for what we used to call them for, and that's the feet. Now we're calling it because the other night I was doing a game and the pitcher would step on the pitching plate and go right into her motion without the pause.
It was actually my game, but yeah.
No, it was different. It was a Fairfax County game I was doing.
It was a small game with nobody there watching it. So
yeah.
It was
McLean O'Connell.
McLean O'Connell.
Yeah.
So I called three illegal pitches in the first inning.
I think I got a few phone calls after that.
And she just was not taking that pause. She was just going right into her motion. And the coach, Maurice, he didn't have a problem with it. He knew what she was doing. But the problem I have is that, you know, and we can go into this a little bit, but that hasn't been called on her all year.
Right.
And then they get me, who knows the rules.
And the first thing they say is, they haven't called
they're
that all
they're
year.
Yelling at me. Yeah. Yeah. And that,
for doing your job.
That's right. Frustrating to me. And it actually aggravates me with the other umpires that aren't calling it. Right. So that, and then that makes me want to train harder with these guys. And you got to call this stuff when it happens. I'd rather call it on you in the first inning instead of the seventh inning when the game's on the line.
Right.
Right. Fix it now. So that's kind of what I'm seeing. The pitching plate, I think that and the hands coming together are the biggest things. They forget where they're at. They step on with their hands together instead of apart.
How about this whole sort of simulation of taking the sign?
Yeah, that's what he's talking about with that McLean pitcher.
If you're using the wristband or whatever, right?
Interestingly, college, up until, maybe a couple weeks into the season this year, there was this misnomer of the rule that you couldn't look at your wristband off the rubber. You had to take your sign on the rubber wristband catcher otherwise. And with the advent of the digital device for pitch calling, they kind of had to rethink that, and that made the rules people kind of dive into the book and be like, wait a minute, there's not really a rule that says you can't look at your wristband off the rubber.
Yeah.
So they said, no, don't call that anymore at the college level. So you know, it's confusing to everybody, even the biggest of minds with the NCAA rule stuff. But the rule everywhere reads that if you have taken the sign off the rubber, when you take the rubber, you must at least simulate taking the sign.
Right.
My thought as a coach is, why are we taking the sign off the rubber then? Right. Get on the rubber and take the sign, you don't have a problem. The biggest inconsistency with that rule that I see, and it gets into, you guys did a rules podcast, last year? And I listened to that a little bit and heard some little catchphrases. And I was like, yeah, that's right. What's the spirit of the rule? So with this one, the rule is that you must simulate taking the sign with your hands apart before bringing them together. Are we going to call an illegal pitch on a pitcher who takes the sign off the rubber, steps on the rubber, brings their hands together, looks up at the catcher, and pauses for like 4 seconds? What's the spirit of that rule? The spirit of that rule is to let the batter get set and know you're going to begin your pitch.
It's just like in the pitch clock scenario in the Major League Baseball where I have to, as a pitcher, I have to make eye contact with the hitter. Right, it's the same thing. It's to avoid quick pitch.
Mm-hmm.
That's the spirit of the rule, is to avoid quick pitching. Right.
Yeah, I don't like the phrase "simulate taking a sign" because some umpires took that too literally. Yeah. There was an umpire when the rule first came out, and this is even before the wristbands. you know, they were actually still taking the sign by looking at the catcher. And an umpire said he was calling illegal pitches because she would take the sign off the rubber, which is off the pitching plate, which is allowed, then step on with their eyes down. Everything else was fine, and then pitch. And the umpire was like, well, they're not really simulating taking a sign because they're not looking at the catcher giving. Yeah. I'm like, I want to know. Yeah.
But there was a nice 3-second pause, and the batter knew the pitch was coming. Right. Like, there's no problem there.
Right. Yeah, it's to avoid quick pitching, right? I mean, that's really the spirit. Yeah. But you mentioned a huge word earlier when you were talking about, we were talking about the technology in schools and stuff, and you mentioned the word equity. Coach and I were, I don't want to say the words that I want to say, but really, really mad that at the beginning of the season, NFHS and VHSL approved electronic communication between coach and catcher for baseball and not for softball. That's in our opinion, you were ready to buy it. I was ready to buy it. And so what influence do you guys have from a softball perspective, an umpire perspective with NFHS or VHSL to sort of implement some of these types of things?
So that's come up for a couple of years, and it was about who has the money to do that and who doesn't. So that's why it's been pushed away for a while. Then it was my understanding that in the fall, there were some states that play softball and baseball in the fall, and there was one state testing it in baseball and one state testing it in softball. So I don't know if something happened there and baseball was able to change the rule in time. I was not aware that they had it for this particular
year. They do have it for the spring
but
season.
Just to give you a heads up, we always get a survey, umpires, commissioners, we get a survey about possible rules coming up. And one of the questions was, you know, how do you feel about the catcher having communication? That was one question with the coach and all the other infields. That was a second question. And almost always when they ask these questions, they're just going through the motions. So I would anticipate because they ask those questions mm-hmm. this year, you might see a rule change next year.
I've seen it in the college game where they're using the digital device. And instead of, you know, calling that blue 42 or 723 or whatever, and they're looking at the grid on the arm trying to figure out what you're calling, and it's taken forever. And, you know, there's a time limit on that. The little, like,
Apple Watch looking thing that they've got
literally says
fastball away,
curveball away. Right. So I mean that speeds up the game so well that it's like, why would we not want that?
I mean there are coaches that we've all encountered. And it's like a human rain delay on getting pitch calls in and all that kind of stuff.
And the 20 seconds that's allowed is an absolute eternity. I've sat there and counted it a couple times, and you're getting to 17, 18 every time, and I'm like, oh come on.
It's also just obnoxious to hear, you know, your third base coach yelling out a sign, your bench coach is yelling something out to the catch, all you're hearing is 3-2-5. I mean, they're like arguing over each other sometimes.
Yeah.
Can we not use the colors? Because when y'all yell blue 73, and I'm like,
Omaha. Yeah, right? What's the number one sort of misunderstood rule that players, coaches, parents don't get? They don't understand it. It's over their head. They never learned it. Is there anything other than, I mean, the obstruction interference thing, right? But is there something else that
besides obstruction of an interference?
Because that's what I was gonna say.
We could spend an eternity on that one.
Yeah, look back rule.
Yeah, let's talk. Oh, yeah, let's talk about that.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, I know why. Okay.
Well, last night, and by the way, last night I don't know who it was. It was either you or Sean or somebody is like, okay, Kevin's runners all leave early. Watch out.
That was me. Because they do.
Well, and that's another one right there. So, okay, runners leaving early. Again, doing some of this college stuff, the feedback we've gotten on that is don't call it unless it's bad.
Yeah.
The last thing you want and the last thing you guys want as coaches is to pull up a video where an umpire's called your run and leaving early and they didn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or the look back thing where the pitcher's both feet
are out of the box, out of the circle.
By six inches. Yeah.
Now, hit by pitch is another one. That's, as you know, the high school rule is different than USA softball, where they don't have to make an attempt to get out of the way. But if it hits them out of the box, so let's say you have someone crowding the plate and it hits her in the elbow and she never moved, she has to move in that situation. So that a lot of coaches aren't aware of that rule, that if it hits them in the box, they don't have to move. But if it hits them out of the box, they do have to make an attempt.
Or how about the swinging, the process of swinging and getting hit? Dead ball strike. People miss that one all the time as well.
That's one of the worst calls to have to make. You got drilled in the ribs, but I'm going to call you for a strike and you're staying right here. Like,
that's painful. Nice. But, all right, do we want to dive into interference and obstruction?
I think Jimmy really feels like he needs it.
Do we got video?
I mean, you have the video. We can, we can put. I think these guys have seen it, though.
Yeah, the one from last night?
Yeah.
So just explain to me. Like, I feel like she played it perfectly.
Do you want to give the color? Like, explain the play so people
should I give it as an unbiased party?
Yes. Matt was there. Matt was at the game.
Have you guys seen the video?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, basically, you got a girl rounding third, coming to home. The center fielder, I think, by the way, threw a freaking dart.
One hop.
My interpretation of it at the time, and I since have seen the video, is that the catcher was standing appropriately
well positioned
in front of the plate, not in the baseline. It's a one hop dart up the line by just a couple of feet, not even that. So she steps over to catch the ball. Looked very apparent to me that she was going to grab the ball. But at that point now, she's blocking the base completely. The runner had no opportunity to get there. It was a little bit of a bang bang at that point. And that really was the meat of it. And and she gets called safe. She would have been out by a mile, and she gets
his explanation to me is never gave her a path even before the ball got there. And I argue that there was a path.
Well, there definitely wasn't a path by the time she caught the ball, but
is giving a path in the rule book for NFL.
Right. I kind of looked at it in super slow mo, and it may not have been obstruction, but all right. Do you know how it explains what the catcher is supposed to do in that situation in the rule book? It's the one time in the rule book where it gives coaching advice, in a sense. It specifically says, like you said, the catcher was outside of the base path. Yeah. They're supposed to be outside the base path, receive the ball, and then go into the base path.
Right.
That's what it says in the rule book. So,
but does she have an opportunity to make a play on the ball? Because there was not an option for her to catch that ball.
Now we're going
to
get into, like, you know, the fine details of that play.
Yeah.
But the fact that she went into the base path without the ball now puts it in a situation where she might get called for obstruction. You know, I don't want to get into was it the right or wrong call. But I also have to look at it as, who do I want to have this argument with? Do I want to have, and I don't mean personality-wise.
Well, we were at Riverside, so we know who's winning.
Do I want to have the argument with the defensive coach or the offensive coach?
Right.
Like, where do I have more to go with? And the fact that she stepped into the base path without the ball puts me in a situation now where I might get the call wrong.
Yeah.
You know, but if she had done it the way the rule states, caught the ball, and I know the ball drew her in, and then went in, we wouldn't be having an argument at all.
Right.
Now, do you have the right to the ball? That's an interference obstruction conversation.
Yeah.
And the only protection on having the right to the ball in an FHS is the initial play on a batted ball.
Right.
You do not have the right to go to a thrown ball if it's going to take the path away from the runner.
Oh. I don't understand what the catcher's options are at that point. If I don't move to my left to catch the ball, the ball goes to the backside.
But what caused her to go into the base path? It was an errant throw, theoretically.
It was perfect.
Well, perfect would have been to get it here and then go into the base path and tag her. But the ball drew her into the base path.
Which we teach.
Well, I guess.
I was going to say, where do you want the tag to go? You want it to go on the left side of the plate.
But another way to think about that, though, Jimmy, perhaps, again, if you can be unbiased about it, is let's pretend the throw was further up the line. Then what? Right? Is she going to run up the line and bowl the girl over while she's trying to make an attempt on the ball?
Which Will has
two videos of in the same game.
You know what I'm saying? Like that actually puts it a little bit into perspective for me.
I still feel like it was just clear. A step and a tag.
So
yeah, this was bang bang on every.
Well, and you again, your play, the play you're referring to isn't like the play you're referring to.
Right.
But in the sense, it's got the same idea. So in super slow mo, I might say, yeah, it looks like she's got the ball. It looks like the runner, and I got to decide: did the runner slide early or not? Because that would be obstruction if she chose to slide early. Because you're now in the one step in the lane, and obviously that's harder to tell in fast motion on the spot. But
the thing I struggle with is just I don't know what to tell my catcher to do.
That's a big thing right there. That is a big thing right there. Is sometimes the situation creates obstruction and there's nothing that they did wrong.
Right.
But it's still obstruction.
Well, yeah, that's I had this a couple of years ago where, we had a runner stealing third. We were on defense, the third baseman. The catcher threw it, but it kind of took her toward the bag. So and he called it on my third baseman, and I just said, so that's fine. I respect your call. What is it that you want my third baseman to do? Let the ball fly into left field? And basically, it was like, yeah, basically.
So then to counter that, if that's not obstruction, why shouldn't we be throwing the ball in the running lane every single time?
Yeah, I agree with that. That's fair. I agree with that.
So we have.
But I'm just saying athletically. We all go to the ball, right?
It's just natural
instinct to go get the ball, right? I mean, and that's basically what you're saying about your catcher.
So the NCAA has updated their version of this rule and has it clarified things? I don't know. I mean, they have added that you can make a play on the ball as part of their wording. They have added that they don't want you blocking the leading edge of the base, so they don't want you stepping in front of home plate and taking the lane away. But they have also made it apparently clear in the video that they showed on this at the beginning of the training video that the biggest thing they didn't want to take away was great plays by the defense.
Made a
good throw. The runner slid right into the glove with the ball inside of it.
Yeah,
I could see how you'd look at that video last night and say, man, that was a great play.
Well, the hard part is there was a play later in the game.
Well, that's the almost ironic part about it, right? Like we had another play later in the game where there was a bumping at third base as she was rounding and then dead to rights at home because I sent her, right? And
but wait, before you sent her, did you see the umpire make the obstruction
call? He was not looking.
So then that's on you.
Yeah.
Well, I would agree. I would partially agree with that.
I know. I mean, the umpire missed the call, not going to send her to her death if you didn't see the umpire make the call. I'll give you an example of what happened the other day, and it was a JV game. The girl hit a stand-up double, all right? And so I'm the base umpire, and the shortstop already has the cutoff. Shortstop has the ball in the cutoff position, and the second base person was standing, 2 feet beyond second. So this girl rounded second on her double. She wasn't going anywhere. Took like one step and slightly bumped into the second baseman that was standing there. She slowly turned around and looked at me, and I'm putting up my left arm, and she takes off for third. Yeah. And remember, the shortstop's got the ball.
Right.
And the shortstop's like, what the heck is going on? She like tosses the third base person. There's the tag. I'm like, time. Got obstruction at second. I put her back at second. But it just shows that she knows the rule. And then I asked the coach about it. I was like, boy, she really understands the rule. And he's like, I didn't teach her that. That was her dad, I think.
Yeah. So wait, put the runner back at second?
Yeah, because the obstruction is you're protected between the two bases you obstructed, but you're only going to get the base you would have gotten anyway. She wasn't going to ever get third.
All right, so in the situation that Kevin was referring to, she was thrown out, but had obstruction been called,
then she would have been put back at third.
Put back on third, she would not have
But why not? She gets in a rundown. They start throwing the ball around, it gets thrown somewhere, and you score three runs. I mean, that's a smart coaching play, and a lot of coaches don't know that rule.
Right.
And it happens a lot on just a base hit. They're rounding first. They're not going anywhere. But the first base person standing on the base, and, the umpire calls obstruction. And when I was a first base coach, I was like, go. And they're like, why? What are you talking about? Getting a rundown.
Yeah. I have a question. So in the game where there was the illegal pitch and my hitter got a base hit, right? Is it the umpire's responsibility or is it my responsibility as the coach? Because you said illegal pitch, and before you even kind of got to me, I'm like, I'll take the result.
Right. You knew.
I'll take the result.
Yeah.
So is it the umpire's mechanic to ask me if I want the result of the pitch or the
penalty?
That's in your mechanic to do that.
Yep. We have to go to you, even if it's obvious.
Yeah.
The only time we wouldn't go for you is if the batter got to first and all other runners advanced. Then
natural order.
Right.
Of
natural
life.
Order.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and that can hurt you too. So let's say you've got a runner on first, illegal pitch, batter gets a base hit to the outfield, runner on first gets to second, now is headed to third, and the outfielder throws him out at third. You can't undo that.
Right.
Everybody's advanced at least one base, so you can't say, "Ooh, I got an out on that. Let me take that back. I'll have to redo the attack."
The one illegal pitch that has to give you a decision is girl steals second on an illegal pitch, and it would happen to be a strike. So now your choice is strike
or runner
and second, or put the runner back and ball. So,
circumstance count, score,
right,
speed of the runner,
I had one the other day. The pitcher brought her hands together, took it out of her glove, rolled it on her leg to get the grip, put it back in.
Yep.
And I called the illegal pitch. The batter knew what to do. I mean, she took the biggest home run hack I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And swung and missed. And, okay, that's ball two, not strike one.
Yeah.
And, yeah, technically I should have given the coach the choice on that, but I don't think I did. I think.
And well, that brings up another thing for coaching advice, that there's coaches listening. You know, we do say, like, that's just she put her hands together, fixes her hair, rubs whatever, and then goes back. We've called illegal pitch. She hasn't started her pitch yet.
She could have stepped off.
She should step off.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Then get the ball. Because the only thing that can happen for the batter, for the pitcher in that situation is worse. Yeah.
It's like a free play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
What can catchers do to help you guys other than not get beat up back there? Like catch the ball. That's usually a good place to start.
Yeah. But. I mean, okay. So you're talking, you know, you and Jimmy coach schools that are really strong. You got pretty darn good catchers on your roster, so we're probably talking higher level catchers, you know, because what can catchers do at JV levels, rec levels? Like, catch the ball, please.
Yeah.
You know, what can catchers do? Okay.
Or what do the good catchers do?
I mean, what they don't want to do is if a pitch is in the dirt and they're pulling it a mile up, or if it's in the other batter's box and they're pulling it back, then turn around looking at you like, where'd that miss?
Right. Yeah. Like those 10 U Little League kids.
Do that. But I mean, even some of the stronger high school kids can do that. I don't want to throw schools and kids under the bus, but somebody did that to me in a very high level high school game the other night. Like, I was like, don't do that. You know where that was. It was in the other batter's box and you pulled it. Like, you know where that was. Don't ask me that. Know the strike zone. You know the strike zone. You know, and you know what pitches you can maybe get a little extra on, you know, and everybody wants the river called. There's no rule book on the planet that says the pitch in the river is a strike, but everybody wants that called. Every coach wants that called. We want to call strikes. How do they receive? You know, are they getting that pitch that's in the river and then pulling it back toward the middle of the plate? Well, that makes me look a little worse calling that because, hey, it looks like the catcher thought it was a foot outside. Stick it rather than pull it.
Yeah.
Get your shoulders around, make that thing look like a strike to everybody watching on the side so I'm not getting yelled at when I call it for you. That's one of the bigger things. You know,
keeping fingers up on low pitches.
Yeah.
You know, once they turn like this, it could be the same location.
Yeah.
But this and this look completely different.
Totally.
Yeah, that's going to draw the most oohs and ahs from crowds is, you know, a catcher going to catch a pitch that's handcuffing them, that you know they didn't expect to move the way it did, and it did, and it caught the zone at the knees, and I'm going to ring it up, but they're catching it down to their left. Everybody's going, ooh, don't know about that one. You know, that's definitely something. You guys as coaches ask your catchers, where was that pitch? Are you asking them or are you asking us?
Does that piss you guys off?
No, but like,
where'd that miss?
When they turn around and ask us, it's like, okay, well, you know, I thought it missed, first of all.
Right.
You know, if it was over here, I thought it missed outside. If you're digging it out of the dirt, I thought it missed low. Like, you're not asking us, you're asking them.
Right.
You know, did my pitcher, you know, this happens in the college game all the time, man. I was doing Randolph-Macon-Lynchburg game, and you should see the Morse code that the catchers were doing with the coaches to tell them, did the pitcher execute the pitch? Did it catch the strike zone? What, you know?
Yeah, we have that.
What happened? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, you're not always asking our opinion. Sometimes you are, but more often than not, you're asking the catcher.
Yeah.
Or you just trying to get into our head.
Well, you know? I mean, I use Marissa as a proxy. Right.
She's right. And that's the other thing I was going to say was, yeah, man, I mean, you know, no, we don't want you guys hollering at us from the dugout or parents from the stands or anything. But, man, your best tool is your catcher.
Right.
Let the catcher have conversations with us all day long, man. I've got a tight strike zone. I mean, everybody knows that, you know, you know, I'm not going to call stuff above the sternum. You don't want kids swinging at this pitch anyway. The high school strike zone says front armpit. Like,
oh, your story with Brandon and Wesleyan is great.
Yeah. But like, you know, I rang one up here and he was like, oh my God, don't ever swing it. That's a strike, but you guys don't want that called? Okay. But yeah, I mean, you know, the catcher should very much have dialogue with umpires. You know, are you used to getting this pitch called that's off the plate this much? Like, I'm used to not calling that, but if you're used to getting it at this level, I probably need to know that. You know, I mean, if that's been a strike all year long, like, I don't want to do anything different and stand out for that reason. You know, let them have conversations, you know, at the higher levels where you do deal with some egos behind the plate sometimes, you know, they don't want catchers turning around and asking umpires where pitches are. Have the conversation facing forward, teach your catchers that.
Right.
You know, things of that nature, how to have dialogue with umpires. But yeah, man, I mean, if you're frustrated with me and you don't know how to express that, that makes my job a lot harder. You know how to have those conversations and feel free to have them. Because like you said, yeah, your catcher is definitely the best resource for that.
And if they have those little stickers that say, I love umpires on the back of that, that helps a lot. Yeah.
Do you guys get fired up for high level games? Like when you look at your calendar and you see you got a game between Woodgrove and Riverside, are you like, hell yeah, let's go?
We had a survey years ago
about what we got fired up about. Huh?
We got no hit.
I know. That's why I said.
I get fired up mostly about a game where I don't know the coaches.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's just something about that. Whether it's 10U rec or a varsity game, it's like I got to prove myself, you know.
We're starting to see a lot more non-district games between these schools that know each other is going to be good. I mean, look at Madison's schedule this year.
Yeah.
Last night, Colgan played at McLean. Like, you know, a lot of the umpires in our association had never seen Dorsey Gross throw before.
Yeah.
You know, that was a great experience for them. You know, things like that. Like, yeah, we love seeing these, you know, Light Ridge versus somebody out, you know, Lake Braddock or something like that. Battlefield did Braddock the other night. That was nice.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. So, yeah, you know. We've got, talking about the way we assign during the season and knowing kind of when to put people in situations to help them grow and see better pitching and see stronger games. We keep district standings and keep an eye on that and see what those big matchups are. You know, like you said, Light Ridge last year versus Light Ridge this year, like, you know, yeah, we had an inkling that was happening. I know Peyton Robinson. I know how good she is, but like, yeah, no, we didn't know you'd be undefeated going into last night. You didn't know that.
Right.
You know, so there's going to be some things that are a little bit different than we expected that are very real. And, yeah, we want to give you a good performance behind the dish in a game like that. So, we keep an eye on those things.
And if there is a good pitcher out there, that might be an opportunity for a new umpire to say, you know, all right, first place versus last place or something. You know, now you're going to see good pitching. It might not.
Yeah, we had a rookie last night.
If you make some mistakes, not a big deal. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
But then it turns out to be a 2-0 game, and it's quite an experience.
Yeah,
dude. So yeah, my first Division I game ever this year was a game down in Chapel Hill, and it was Oakland in the Horizon League at UNC. So of course that's a great game to throw me on behind the dish. And North Carolina had just beaten somebody the night before. 23-1, and I think they probably expected this game to go the same way. It was 1-0. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah.
So, it ended 1-0.
It ended 1-0.
Holy cow.
Dude, I hadn't been nervous on a softball field in forever and had butterflies all the way through that game. And yeah, I mean, that was ended up being baptism by fire. But man, that was fun.
That's awesome.
Well, guys, we cannot thank you enough for your time. This has been, I think, not just entertaining, but rewarding, educational. And something that I think parents, players, coaches, your fellow colleagues can all listen to and really get something from. So we thank you so much for your time. Sort of final question is, what advice do you have for managers of teams, players, catchers, pitchers, anybody that's in this game? Do you have a piece of advice as it relates to, you know, the umpire? You know, the umpires that are at the game. We'd love to sort of just leave it with sort of one piece of final words of wisdom.
You want me to go first?
Go ahead.
Well, so I also UIC tournaments.
Yep.
And if there's a lot of chatter from the stands, I don't want the umpires have to deal with it. So I'll go up to the parents. And I'll be like, you know, let your coach do the communicating. Do you not respect your coach enough to handle this? And it's funny because I'm sure – you know, I don't know you all, your team, but I'm sure your parents are probably a little calmer because of this expectations you set. And then sometimes at the lower levels, when it's a new coach, all the parents feel like they need to get involved and yell. But at the older levels where the coach is more respected, they've kind of laid their expectations. So it's just, I always just keep reminding them. I'm like, you have a coach, let them communicate to the umpire. And, you know, or if you think you have some advice, go over to the dugout and go talk to the coach and tell him your advice, which they never do. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's my point, and that usually quiets them down. Just as a reminder, it's your job to communicate with the umpire, not the parents.
Yeah. So I will say the statement, give us a chance to officiate the game. Give us a chance to get the calls right before the explosion happens, or somebody comes running out yelling at us, you know, on a play. You know, let's talk about it and give us a chance to officiate the game. That's the biggest advice I can give coaches, managers, parents. You know, don't, I know it's the heat of battle, everybody's amped up, but give us a chance to do that.
Realize that when we get something wrong, we probably know.
Yeah.
I mean, especially after the fact, we're looking at all kinds of video. The call I had in your game against Woodside, Woodgrove last year at the plate,
right.
The kid's foot kicked up, and I went back to the video and was like, okay, I know exactly why I missed that. Showed you the one that I had a couple weeks later, so thank you. You put me in a position to be able to make a change there and get that other call that was even closer right in that situation, number one. Number two, how many times have you thought we've gotten something wrong and gone back after the game and watched it on video, and we've actually gotten it right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That probably happens a lot. Have you ever gone back to the kid that was mad at us for not calling the runner out on the steal where she actually got her hand in there and shown your catcher and be like, no, they got that right.
Yeah.
You know, so don't be afraid to follow up and do stuff like that. I mean, you know, and man, biggest thing recently for me is don't teach your runners to blow up the first baseman coming around the bag at first base when they're on the bag. That's never the right move. You know, we've got to do a better job of calling that obstruction when we see it. You know, if you're going to change the runner's angle from what they want to take coming around the bag at first, we need to call that when we see that.
Yeah.
You know, 90% of the time there's going to be no award given, so nobody's even going to realize we called obstruction on it, but we got to call it. You know, and okay, the question that came up as a result of me making the call I made in that situation was, well, what does my runner do differently? As an umpire, I don't want to coach your kids, but I do coach plenty of times, and Joe and I have talked about this. You know, what do we teach our kids to do in that situation? If you want to create some lighter contact going around the side just to make it more clear that there is obstruction there, that's fine. Something I've taught my kids to do is, when you're taking a wider angle than you want to take because someone's in your way, sit there and holler, obstruction, obstruction, obstruction.
Yeah.
Stick your left arm out. The runner, yourself, the coach, like –
Yeah, in hindsight, there's ways to do this without having aggressive contact. Second play last night, the second one, I should have put my own arm out.
Yeah,
you know, and
you probably would have caught the attention of the first, the plate umpire that would have looked over and been like, oh yeah, that was.
But I was following her, kind of going home to see where the play was going to go there.
Well, and then one last thing too, you know, the bigger games when they really count down the stretch, how many umpires are on the field? Usually three.
Yeah,
two man. We're going to miss stuff. We're going to be out of position on stuff. Like, you know, that's just the reality of the situation. We don't have enough umpires to cover things. I mean, there's a lot of college games running around right now. Steve did a D1 game that was two-man a couple weeks ago.
Wednesday.
Like,
yep. You know,
well, I got one more thought on final thoughts for at least for you could tell your players. It's a Chuck Knoll quote, the old Pittsburgh Steeler coach. He says, play better than the officials officiate.
Don't put them in a position to make that call. Yeah, don't make it that close, right?
Yeah. I'm a VCU guy, and Shaka Smart's mantra, win anyway.
Yeah.
You know, don't let that affect your mindset enough that it's going to mess you up for the rest of the game.
Well, Joe, Steve, Will, we really appreciate it. Yeah. I can't thank you guys enough for helping out with this and really kind of jumping on board with this. And I think it's going to be pretty valuable information.
Yeah. Well, one takeaway I took is that we're in pretty good hands here. You guys are obviously great umpires, but you care about what we have going on around here, and you care about the future of the game and having it officiated the right way. So I appreciate you guys. Even though I yell at you sometimes, I still appreciate you.
Guys, thanks so much. For everybody here at This Week in Fast Pitch, it's been another great episode. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, live life like a 3-1 count. Thanks a lot, everybody.
See you.